This is a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Segment with the one and only Labour Party's very own Rachel Brooking, who is the MP for Dunedin. We're here starting things off in our Brooking Report, a monthly segment. We'll be talking to Rachel all about the goings-on in her world. I guess today is going to be pretty introductory. Good morning to you, Rachel. Morena, how are we feeling today?
I'm feeling very good. Beautiful day here.
It's a beautiful day, you reckon?
I think it is.
Yeah, well,
compared with some of the weather we've had recently.
No, fair enough.
Relative.
Fair enough. I left the house this morning with just my little polo on, and I didn't think it'd be that cold, but it was blisteringly cold by the time I got here to the station.
Well, walk faster.
Walk faster is a good piece of advice there. Now, you were recently on a visit to Germany, where in Berlin you used some kind of container recycling machine, which is pretty incredible technology. In the Instagram post showing off this piece of tech, you said that 76% of New Zealanders want a sort of container recycling scheme implemented. How could we implement that?
Yeah, so back in the day when I was a kid, mm-hmm. it was quite usual to refill things like
milk bottles.
Mm-hmm. And then when I was a student, beer bottles. Mm-hmm. And yet we sort of dropped out of that as a society. So when we were last in government, there was a big lobby for some sort of container deposit scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And I was briefly the Associate Minister for Environment and had waste delegation. So we were looking at a new piece of legislation to update all of our waste legislation, mm-hmm. that would have enabled for more container return schemes, and really looking at the people who produce a thing to be taking back all the components of that thing, and talking about a circular economy.
Mm, that's cool. I think a lot of problems with industry is that a lot of bottles and cans and whatnot aren't, they're all different, you know?
Yeah.
And they're not as easy to recyclable. If it was one standardized can or bottle, like, it'd be so much easier to recycle things.
It would be easier. So the EU has a directive now that every EU country, European Union country, has to have a container return scheme in place by 2030.
Mm-hmm.
And so Germany's had one for 20 years.
Mm.
And they have these... A company that started in Norway in the 1970s is this reverse vending machine. But it's not a monopoly with just the one machine. There's six different companies that have these machines in Germany. And so Germany, all the shops are required to have these machines.
Mm-hmm.
And they can either just take back the ones that are in the deposit return scheme. So those are juice bottles and or anything in a can or plastic, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can also refill. So, but that's a voluntary scheme. That's not a mandated scheme. So the mandate is for particular types of plastic and cans, and it's very clear when you go to the supermarket or your dairy, whatever it is, how much of a deposit you're paying on that container, and then how much, and then that is what you will get back when you put it in the machine. And of course, because these are then for recycling, not refilling, the machine destroys the container. So you can't put a little toilet paper roll.
Yes, you can't try and scam the machine.
With a wee fishing rod and put it in and out. Because I think it's about 4 billion euros.
Oh, my God.
You know, billion.
That's the cost of half a new hospital.
Euros.
Oh my gosh.
More than a hospital. it's really important that there's no fraud in the system.
Yep.
So we also met the group that is in control of the scheme, and they showed us some of the tech that they have to prevent fraud.
Mm.
And of course, Germany, very different from New Zealand, has got a whole lot of countries at its border. And so they've got a special print or a special ink that they use on their containers so that they know it's a German container.
Wow.
So the deposit's been paid into their scheme.
Uh-huh.
And so you get the deposit back from their scheme.
Wow, very German thing to do, isn't it? What were some other highlights from Berlin that you had?
Well, I was there with a colleague from the Greens as well, Kahurangi Kata, and we also were going on to Warsaw for an interparliamentary type meeting, and then into the Geneva for an interparliamentary union meeting, big international meeting. So we met the Friendship, the new MP, who's the chair of the German Pacific Friendship Group, and went to the embassy. And then we also met up with whoever could come, who's involved with Māori Pacific group in Berlin as well. So that was fun. Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, but we weren't there for long. So. And we did run around pretty much every supermarket in central Berlin. But another highlight was we met one of the leading environmental NGOs and the founder of that group. So he's been going for 50 years and has done some really important international litigation in the environmental sphere. So that was a total highlight meeting him.
Awesome. Awesome. Sounds like you had a blast of a time. Now, you were OUSA president in 1997. What were the sort of major concerns for students back then? Did you, and how did you advocate for those issues as a student leader?
So the big issues were the fees and the compounding interest that we had on the loan scheme that went with it. So before the 1990s, and I can't remember the exact dates, it was very cheap to go to university. But by the time I was there in the mid-90s, it cost a lot. So my husband was... Not my husband then, but he was a med student, and it was sort of $10,000 fees. And you think about inflation, what $10,000 was in the 90s. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then we had 7.5% compounding interest rates on our loans. So whilst you were studying, that interest was compounding. So you came out with a loan that, you know,
was ballooned, really.
Vast. Yeah. So, of course, everyone was incentivized to go offshore. Uh-huh. So the main issues were the fees and this compounding interest rates as well. So what we did in the 90s, we had a lot of protests. So I came up through the EAG, the Education Action Group, and organising protests. So we had some registry occupations, not because it was necessarily the university's fault, but when you're in Dunedin, how do you get the attention of the national media?
Mm-hmm.
And the clock towers are a pretty good symbol. A
very good symbol, still is.
Indeed. And we tried to do some more imaginative campaigns as well, just trying to make the point that New Zealand's education system was very expensive. And people would say, oh, yeah, but if you go to Yale, then you have to pay even more. It's like, yeah, but you're going to Yale.
Yeah.
Love University of Otago, it's great, but we've got to compare ourselves with the public sector, universities in the States. Yes. And so we did those comparisons, and we were, you know, a lot more expensive. So, you know, you do all the things, you try and get in as much media as you can, see as many politicians as you can.
Get as many faces as possible.
That's right, all of that.
Nice. It's been an exciting time to be in the Labour Party now, with your new policy announcements around the capital gains tax, funding doctors' visits, and an innovation fund for Kiwi businesses. How do you feel when these massive media-heavy, public attention-heavy, and criticism-heavy moments happen?
So this one's not one that I've been particularly involved with because it's the spokespeople who do
It's not particularly
in
your realm, necessarily.
Yeah. But when it's in my realm... well, it is a bit nerve-wracking when you've got, you don't, not because you're worried that you might have, someone might do a gotcha or anything like that, because obviously you really believe in the policy and you've worked it up and you really care about it, but you don't want to say the wrong thing, and you don't want to cause any embarrassment for your colleagues either. So there's a little bit of angst.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a very tightly choreographed dance, as I think we've seen in the media. recently.
Yeah, it is. When you've got those big announcements and you just want to make sure that everybody is singing from the same hymn sheet. But also, you're excited to get the policy out there and have people talking about it, because obviously we wouldn't be saying it if we didn't believe in it and we want to change the government desperately.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to be able to have some things to be talking about as well. And, you know, we've been criticised for, oh, where's your policy, Labour? And it's like, of course you have to go through processes and wait till closer to the election. So here some is.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, I think Chris Hipkins said that it's been a real time of reflection. You've been thinking about, you know, the results of the last election. And that's a reason why this policy has been so long thought after. How have you been reflecting in your sort of portfolios since since the election?
So my portfolio is a little bit different from other people's in terms of, we just passed a whole lot of laws where we'd repealed the Resource Management Act.
Yes, and you'd kind of replace them with two other acts.
That's
correct?
Right. So we had the Spatial Planning Act. So really trying to look out 30 years and do a whole lot of better planning in New Zealand, including for infrastructure and also hazard areas, doing better in climate adaptation, and a Natural and Built Environments Act, which was more of the regulatory RMA Resource Management Act type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they repealed that in December of 2023, mm-hmm. after they came into government in November 2023. And then in the interim did a horrific Fast Track Approvals Act, yep. whereby some special companies who get on to their fast track get to override environmental protections.
And public opinion in a lot of the case.
Yeah, it's terrible. There's no social license for these projects unless they go about making their own special efforts. So what we've said in terms of this space is we're not coming up with brand new policies in it. We're saying we will try and work with the government to get something in place that we both Labor and National can live with.
Mm.
Might not be perfect, but that we can live with. Mm. So I have had some briefings from the minister on his new RMA replacement legislation, and we're waiting to see that introduced, and then that will go through the Select Committee process. So I've spoken with lots of professional groups at conferences about what the government has publicly released in terms of what they're saying and what our main concerns with it are. So they're saying it's all about the enjoyment of private property rights. And that could mean a million different things. Mm-hmm. It's not very specific.
Pretty vague, yeah.
Yeah. So if it means any environmental protection on someone's piece of land means that councils, so ratepayers, have to pay money for that protection, then obviously there will be no protections or very few protections. Yeah,
councils are pretty skint at the moment.
That's right.
Famously.
That's right. Yep. And voters don't want to pay more in rates.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be terrible, and of course we'd be 100% opposed to that. But if it means actually if an existing provision in the Resource Management Act, for anyone who's listening about to do an RMA exam, Section 85, if it's a tweak of that, that means that, you know, you can't reasonably use your property because of some environmental protection and you need some rates rebate or something like that, mm. something smaller, then maybe that will be okay. But we don't know where the government's going to land until we see the legislation, mm-hmm. and we haven't seen it yet.
And this government seems to thrive in ambiguity, doesn't it?
Well, and also, I mean, there's been this real problem with it. Somebody texts a minister and then they change the law,
mm.
and they also change regulations. So those are things that don't normally go through Parliament but go through big public consultation processes. And then if the regulations aren't met, groups can do a judicial review and go to court. But what this government's doing is it keeps changing regulations through urgency and all stages urgency or at the very last minute,
mm.
By primary legislation. And it's a very cynical, terrible way to make laws.
Yeah, very unaccountable, isn't it?
That's right.
Being able to do anything in opposition is pretty difficult, but I think the difficulty is kind of up for you, given that you're in a city that, as you said before, is very hard to bring national media attention to. How do you lobby on behalf of Ōte Putu in opposition, in Parliament, to make sure that the residents of Dunedin's voices are heard, even while you're in opposition?
Yeah, so there's I talked to all of the relevant spokespeople, so tertiary education is obviously a big one,
mm-hmm.
And also health is another very big one. So when we're asking questions of ministers, that there is an Ōte Putu flavour to all of that. And then I also join in some of the question asking of ministers when we've got some set pieces around annual reviews and estimates.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will also write to ministers myself or with the spokesperson. So we've got big housing issues in Dunedin, and I have normally quite a quiet voice, but in Parliament I do a lot of heckling.
Mm-hmm.
And I do yell about Carroll Street in particular an awful lot. So this is a block of houses that were being developed by Kāinga Ora. There were 16 houses and they knocked them down and they got it all consented and ready for some infill housing, or, you know, some one and two bedroom apartments, 42 of them.
Yeah.
Perfect location, Carroll Street, for students who don't know, is just, you know, a few blocks past the Octagon, just up from the Exchange and along a wee bit.
Mm-hmm.
So very central, near to a whole lot of different services. And the minister keeps saying, oh, Kaiangaroa just needs to build more 1- and 2-bedroom houses. And here they are. So I do yell about that quite a lot, and I've written to him about it, and I've invited him to come and see these houses as well, and I've brought our opposition spokesperson and raised it in the media as well. So I'll continue on doing that.
Mm.
And then that minister is also the RMA reform minister, Chris Bishop. So, you know, I talk to him as well, you know, if we're in the queue.
Mm-hmm.
At the cafeteria.
Nice. Very subtle.
But also respectfully, because I'm not going to berate him at the coffee area, but if he says, what is this that you keep yelling at me, then I'm certainly going to tell him.
So it seems like this issue with Carroll Street kind of mirrors what happened with that block of potential social housing out in Koputai Port Chalmers, correct? Where there was a series of social housing that was knocked down. The residents were promised that they'd have new spots in the new social housing that was going to be built. However, it hasn't been built, and in fact, Kāinga Ora is trying to sell off that land on Trevi.
Yeah, so that's the next step, right, that they're actually trying to sell off the land that hasn't happened yet on Carroll Street.
Mm.
The Port Chalmers example, that's a beautiful community there. They're right next to the school, just at the end of that street. There's early childhood education, there's a bus stop, there's the bikeway, there's a little supermarket very nearby, so you don't, you know, if you don't have a car.
You don't have to go far.
You don't have to go far, that's right. The street, as I'm told by the locals, is named after one of the original architects of the state houses who was really involved under Peter Fraser. Well, sorry, not original state houses, but it was involved for some time ago. So, that's a tragedy as well. That those houses aren't 1- or 2-bedroom apartments, not all of them. They were a different range of housing stock, so not quite what the minister is going on about all the time, but...
Similar principle, I guess.
Totally the same principle.
Being kind of stabbed in the back.
The houses were there. They were knocked down, all ready to go again, and they've just pulled the plug.
Yeah, and the people who were living there just, I don't know, we don't know where they are now. It seems, you know.
I think there's one family in particular that, did have to move. Some of the other housing did get rebuilt
in that
area. And so people have moved about, but that was, you know, before this government.
Yes. Students, I don't know about students for a second because, you know, the student radio station, students doing exams, we're on campus right now. Students are facing the cost of living crisis in a very unique way. You know, they got very high rent costs. They're very time poor as they're either studying all the time or they have to work on top of that. They have no real money for socialising at a very pivotal point of their lives. Now, I've seen a lot of positive reception to policies like the Greens Rental Warrant of Fitness amongst students in my time here at the University of Otago, which is about 6 years floating around campus in varying degrees. What policies does the Labour Party currently have that would improve the sort of material conditions for students?
Yeah, so on the housing, I think that's a huge issue for students.
Especially for Dunedin.
For Dunedin students, absolutely. And I have a lot of people coming to my office with specific concerns about it as well. So Labour, of course, introduced the Healthy Homes Standards, and they only came into effect for rental properties on 1 July this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a bit of work to do there in terms of making sure that people know about those standards. And the way that they're being audited is interesting, and whether or not there's any enforcement action. So MB, the Ministry for Business, Employment and Immigration, they came down before 1 July with the university and IUSA and looked at some flats and sort of said that they were okay, or maybe a couple of them weren't. And I think they were pretty much just looking around the Castle Street area or that sort of part of the student area. So there needs to be more of that and action on it. And then if that's not working, then we need to change something. So so I think a little bit of time for that to bed in is important.
Yeah.
In terms of other policies for the Labour Party, so that's going back. You know, that legislation was introduced before I was in Parliament in 2000. So I think it was early 2000 that it came through. And it's taken this long for it to be implemented, you know, 1 July 2025 for everyone. Like state housing, Kāinga housing had to go earlier and other things had to go earlier as well, but 1 July is the last of the implementation dates, so we need to see if it's implemented or not. But going forward into policy for the election, we haven't come up with any specific housing policies yet, mm-hmm. but certainly on the radar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Watch the space.
Well, and the, you know, what we're saying and what Chris Hipkins is saying very clearly is that our focus is on jobs, health, homes and cost of living. So this squarely fits into the homes part of it.
Mm-hmm. Is the heritage homes exemption still a thing in the healthy home standards? Because I remember that being sort of a bit of a rock in the cogs, so to speak.
Well, there's a reasonable test. So if you can't reasonably put it in. So again, if because it's only been in since 1 July, if people are using that, we can't reasonably do it because the house is too old and it's built on the ground, and so you can't put the insulation under the house, for instance,
mm-hmm.
Then that's another thing that we should be looking at. So I'm trying to follow that, and I've got someone working on it at the moment as well.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, one very silly question. Does Dunedin need to have more of a Halloween spirit? You know, we're a Scottish city. Hallows Eve is originally a Scottish holiday. Does Dunedin need more of a Halloween spirit?
Well, there are parts of Dunedin where
parts.
It's huge.
There are parts.
Like,
yeah.
So in St Clair, for instance, heaps of kids go out there on the flat,
mm-hmm.
And go around, and I know there's some amazing houses that are dressed up for it. And it's a bit tricky, though, in the student area with it being in the middle of exams. So maybe we could do a bit more, but I think if you're looking for it, then you can find it.
Okay, that's good to know. Because when I've been here, all I know is, like, you know, the students have a bit of a party, and then aside from that, I don't really see much. Mostly I'm operating in North Dunedin, so I guess I gave a skewed perspective.
I was with our commerce spokesperson the other day, and we're doing a range of things. We're talking about supermarket duopoly was a big thing,
mm-hmm.
And also the pay waiver and what it's going to do for small businesses. So we were at Paddy's and Cream.
Mm-hmm. Paddy's and Scream?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday.
Yeah. They had amazing artwork all up over the shop. So there's some Halloween action for people.
Awesome.
And a pumpkin ice cream.
Oh,
it was really good.
Very, very exciting stuff. Well, thank you for joining me on the program this morning, Rachel. I really appreciate your time, and I can't wait for our chat in November. Do you have any final words or words of wisdom to leave our lovely listeners with?
Well, lovely listeners, good luck with all of your exams. Mm-hmm. And I hope you can find jobs if you're looking for jobs during summer. And get some time off as well, so come back all refreshed for 2026. It's going to be a big year, election
Amen.
Year.
Amen to that, folks. Amen to that. That was Rachel Brooking here with the Brooking Report on Radio 191 FM. Te reo.
Thanks for listening to Radio 191 FM podcast. All of our content lives online at r1.co.nz.